out. Stop chasing and tune in. What state are you in when your head hits the pillow? You cannot compare your insides to someone else's outsides. Alyssa Romeo. Beware the shiny goals. There are real goals and there are bullshit goals. Leading you. Goals. It's make your goals or bust, y'all. Four keys to nailing your goals every time. Goals. The bigger the better. No goals, no glory. Get your goals. How to win in 5 steps. Really, though? Success talks and motivational speakers on the subject of goals come a dime a dozen these days. Goals have always been one of the hottest topics, even long before Cecil Alec Mace carried out some of the first studies on goal setting in 1935 that found that people are motivated by the accomplishment of goals. Groundbreaking at the time. Since then, there has been no shortage of scientific papers that have been published to prove the validity of goals and how great of a tool they are for helping us achieve what we want in all aspects of life. Goal setting, while being a wildly useful tool for setting a path, following it, and kicking some mega butt, can also take us out of presence and have us constantly leaping from one arrival point to another and another and another. There is a dichotomy that exists here. Setting a goal can be rewarding and also non-rewarding. A goal can take you to a higher vibration or knock you down to a lower. Following a goal can lead to alignment or further from the path. As you can see, I have a love-hate relationship with goals and some real hang-ups with all these goals, 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 goals. Some are bullshit, some are borrowed. At certain points in my life, I've been raring to get after my goals. Take, for example, moving through university. I had very clear non-negotiable goals because I was after my PhD. I was going to be Dr. Peter Kelly. I would score over 85% on each assignment, score over 85% on each exam, obtain an average of 85% across all subjects, and receive 80% or higher on my honors thesis. I set these goals and I achieved them, every single one. I set bigger and higher goals, and that continued to serve me well. I set a goal, I crushed a goal. Years later, even after walking off my PhD path, I set similar goals to grow my network marketing career. I was on a mission, and a mission as big as mine was only possible with big goals, intentional actions, and a strict timeline. I was going to retire my mom. Financial goals and business growth goals were very relevant and remain so today. I now have the goals I set for the New Way Live, you know, attendance, dates, and details. I also set goals that focus more on intention rather than financials or business. Intentional goal example for one of my events, the New Way Live. People will feel 10 times lighter than when they walked in, and they'll hear one or two things that will completely change the game for them. They will feel calm and light and not overwhelmed by the content. It will all land in their cells while allowing their energy to remain excited and clear. They'll leave the event with a new rewiring and a new set of subconscious instructions that upgrades their lives in all areas. These intentional goals are the kind of goals that have been rewarding for me, both for my progression towards my pursuits and for keeping this little lady laser focused. They might be bold, broad, but they are real goals. I have set some crazy records for jumping through the ranks in the network marketing organization I built because my soul just knew what was possible and my inner fire was unstoppable. I was lit. However, I have also learned that there is a fine line between the outrageous but real goal and the fantasy bullshit goal. The outrageous feels good in my soul. The fantasy goals feel like I pulled it out of my ass. I know, that's crass. I'm sorry. Fantasy goals, or bullshit goals, let's keep it crass, come from all sorts of places and in all sorts of forms. Our desire to appear a certain level of motivated to those around us, the way we subconsciously copycat our peers so to not get left behind as they make a run towards their goals, and the ongoing game of comparison and competition. We develop bullshit goals when we do not take the time or find the courage to tune in and get clear on what we really want, what's in our alignment. When life moves fast, it is easy to be clouded by what others want and what others want from us, and the focus shifts from internal to external. Soon, we are so turned around that we have no flipping clue what we want. It becomes easier to just throw down whatever sounds good or looks progressive than to take some time without a goal. We live by numbers and dates, which add to our anxiety. We set goals to double our income, even though all we want to do is take time off to write a book or be with family. We set goals to get more clients, but in truth, we'd like less. Bigger is better, obviously. I mean, we can't be without goals, right? Might as well just make some up that will suffice. At least you have some goals on paper that look amazing, even epic. Yet, you can't derive any sensation in your body when you think about them, write them down, read them out loud, or make plans to move them forward. That's because these beautiful goals are, pardon the phrase again, goals you pulled out of your ass. Alongside the bullshit goals are the borrowed goals. There was a point when my peers wanted to hit more zeros, but my soul didn't. I wanted to generate and create more with what I already had. But since I didn't have a real financial goal, I tacked on some zeros and matched someone else's number. As the months passed, I never hit that number. But my soul didn't give a shit about that goal, because it was one of the shoulds. It was borrowed. She wants to become a New York Times bestseller, so I guess if I'm writing a book, I probably should want that too. What's her name? She wants to be a guest on Oprah, so I should want that too. My bestie wants to be married by the time she's 30. I guess me too, right? My soul sister wants to travel the world by the time she's 45. Then I guess I should, too. So-and-so is getting 6 nipple rings. Well, of course I want that, right? Look how easy and dangerous it is to borrow goals. Stay the course. Arbitrary numbers and other people's goals are fantasy goals. They are not yours, not born from your soul, and not something you can achieve. They are not going to get you anywhere but off your path of alignment. Anytime you set a real, aligned, oh my God, whole body yes, goal, you feel excited by your goal and not drained by it. Bullshit goals are borrowed goals and are like jumping on a train traveling the other direction, far, far away from your alignment. And you're just a sad sack leaning on a window, you know the movie scenes like this, watching your soul wave at you from the platform. Bye-bye, she yells. See you when you get back. She will be there with open arms after you return from your detour, because, of course, in the end, you arrive where you're meant to arrive. Of course, there are no mistakes in the universe. Of course, sometimes you're meant to go the long way, because you end up finding a new journey and seeing some gorgeous flowers, both of which are liable to change your whole direction. The danger is being in the pattern of setting one fantasy goal after the other, to the point that your entire life is based around borrowed and bullshit goals, and every day moves you further away from your tap. Real goals will only ever support or accelerate your alignment, and at the very least will not disturb it or interfere with it. Think about it. If your soul wants to leave your job, take 6 months to go to Asia and create online programs, but you set a goal to become a director at work, what do? You work 12-hour days to sprint up that ladder as fast as you can, and you're exhausted, greeting every morning you wake up with an ugh. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this one out. You are sprinting further away from your alignment. Just listen. Get real with yourself and give yourself permission to drop whatever heavy goals are dragging you away from your tap of alignment. Let's take a moment to check in with your current goals. So write them down, all of them, from the easy ones to the outrageous ones. Now, cross out the goals that feel heavy. Cross out the goals that you are not enjoying pursuing. Cross out the goals that you made up. Cross out the goals that you borrowed. Oh my God, what if you have no goals left? You don't actually have to have a goal right now. I know. The shock, the horror. I hope the success and motivation coaches reading this don't spit on this page. But it's true. Sometimes your focus can be on no more than presence and direction. In recent times, I've become looser with goals, And the lighter and looser I get, the more I've learned about the artistry of setting goals and how much more there is to the goal than reaching the actual goal. I used to set a goal and focus on nothing but reaching said goal. I was completely discounting all the work I did to get as close as I did. I would have a pile of goals, one for every aspect of my life. My body, my impact, my financial abundance, my location, my philanthropy, my spiritual journey, and other personal goals like learn Norwegian. There came a time when these goals didn't fit, because once I realized that I was happy with my body, I didn't want to lose any more body fat. A few years ago, in an annual Transform Your Body competition I joined, we were asked to set goals for our body. This is what I chose. Pita is going to grow her eyelashes longer. What? You might be thinking. But, you see, I didn't want to create any body goals that would take me away from that happiness I was currently feeling in my own body. I didn't want to throw down a number, get to 12% body fat. I didn't want to borrow something from someone else, lose 5 pounds. I was already achieving my goal of feeling totally harmonious with how I ate and moved. Why set a goal that would take me away from that? Eyelashes, it was. My intention is always to expand into health, abundance, happiness, and soul success. But intention and direction are so very different from solid, nose to the grindstone, hit the bullseye or you fail, goals. As I grow into a long-time goal setter, setting goals since I was 7, I've come to understand that there are phases of my life where goals are not necessary. These were the phases of my life that asked for radical presence, going inward, and paying attention to the direction life wanted to move me in, not so much the direction in which I wanted to move. These are times for listening, observing, and being present. Times to allow yourself to shift from the conscious creator to a humble child of the universe who is patiently waiting for guidance. It is those times that call for setting intentions and directions rather than goals. So ask yourself, what does life want from me? It's a little lighter than the question, what do I want to get from life? Pause with this question. It's juicy. You are a masterful creator. You know that, right? So now we know that it might not always be time for an inflexible bullseye goal, especially if you need to pull one out of your butt. But it's always time to be consciously creating. You don't need a specific goal to do that. There's a difference between A, setting a goal because I feel like I need to set a goal, pursue this goal even though it doesn't feel good, ignore all the other opportunities, signals and clues that are jumping out at me because hashtag goal or bust, or B, recognizing that you're always creating your reality with the stories you tell yourself about your life and the vibration you emit that instructs life on your behalf. So consciously choose and tell the story that sends better, grander, and more rewarding instructions to your life. B, B, B. B is where it's at. I believe we should always be checking in with the instructions we're giving to our life through our stories and our vibration. The art to setting goals stems from your alignment. Aligned, soulful goals feel really, really good. Fantasy goals that are bullshit or borrowed feel disconnected from your body. They are often made up and random and a detour away from your alignment. We must be aware of the detours that repeat themselves, because repeated detours don't give us much chance of living in our tap. There is a time for aligned goals, but there is also a time for not setting goals and rather just choosing a direction. Super meaningful intentions and directions can come from a more open question that the universe can help you with. What does life want from me? So just a little PK aside, our stories are everything. I came back to add this little piece the week before my book went to print. It was just too important to leave out, and I'm pretty sure I'll write a whole book on this topic. Now we know that we can borrow goals without even knowing it. It's dangerous, right? But what's more dangerous is when we borrow stories. The stories we tell ourselves about money, relationships, pregnancy, childbirth, success, they make up our identity. These stories and this identity, they give the universe precise instructions on what we like to experience in our lives. Here are some stories. Writing a book with a newborn is pretty much impossible. If you're really a conscious, woke human who gives a shit, you shouldn't have more money than the average person. I'm meant to crave crappy foods while I'm pregnant. It's going to be harder to get stuff done now that I have a baby. Childbirth can't be enjoyable. These are just 5 examples of stories that I've personally decided are not my stories this year. I find myself saying out loud multiple times a day, that's not my story. These stories here feel so much better to me. Writing a book with a newborn is so much better because I'm more efficient than I've ever been in my life. Because I'm a conscious human who gives a shit, I love creating income and circulating it in a way that creates the world I want to see. I love nourishing my body with healthy foods while pregnant, and I've never felt better. I am more productive and effective than ever now that I have a baby, because every hour spent away from her, I make sure is high-performing and worth it. I am so excited to be in labor and to witness how brilliant my body is. If you're listening to my upgraded stories and thinking, yeah, sounds nice, but what about reality? Can you see that story in itself? It's just a story that everything has to go for you like it does for others. It's just a story that reality is king. No, your reality is the stories you're continually telling yourself. The stories you tell yourself show themselves to you in real life over and over and over again, giving you proof. Be careful not to believe your story more than you believe in your power to change it. This is just so important. That's why I had to slot it in right before the book went to print. We have to take more responsibility for our stories and not just lay the big ol' easy for some, or that must be nice, or get real. What is real for you are your stories. Want a different reality? Change your stories. What stories are you borrowing? What stories can you choose that are more rewarding? How can you upgrade your stories so the world knows to respond differently to you? How do you want life to feel? Do you want some nice surprises to show up? How do you want the trip to Oz next year to go? What kind of mentor do you want to attract? How do you want your relationship to feel? How do you want to feel in your body? How do you want to feel when you check your bank account? How does it feel when you're pregnant? Now here's where you change your stories. In the hardcover copy of this book, there's a bonus section at the end called The Script. It's my ride or die every single day conscious creation process for setting powerful intentions for my life, no matter where I'm at with goals. It allows you to give your life instruction. It will move you beautifully in the direction you choose and leave room for the details to surprise you. It will also give you a few examples of results from people who actually use the script. I use this exercise with everyone I mentor, and it's powerful, really powerful. So make sure you grab it and create your own script once you're done with this audiobook, and especially once you're done with the section on money. Celebrate your freedom to fail. Our great privilege, leading you. Failure is being viewed by our generation of leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs differently than previous generations. No longer are we bound by the dichotomies of win or lose, do or die, and pass or fail. Failure is not something to be avoided, but is instead something of value. Failure is essential. Failing isn't failing at all. Failing is no different from succeeding, except that it oftentimes comes before success. Failure is the tadpole. Success is the frog. Failure is the caterpillar. Success is the butterfly. Failure is falling. Success is walking. They are both a part of the same process. From here on out, you can see failure and success as one. We, as a society, give a lot of our attention to success. But stop for a minute and imagine a world without failure. Could you imagine if everything we tried came easy to us for the first time? Or if everything you did well all the time? Could you imagine how absolutely ridiculously boring that would be? Success isn't linear, which is something we've spoken about in previous chapters. And because success isn't linear, neither is failure. This chapter is about changing the way we see failure. It's common to see failure as the end of the road, but what happens when you see failure as just the beginning of the journey, or a step along the way? If you don't hit your goal by the time you expected to, did you fail? No, you made progress towards your goal. If your proposal was rejected the first time, did you fail? No, you now have the opportunity to create something better. If you didn't get the deal you were after, did you fail? No, you're being directed to go after something that is more aligned with your soul. If you got negative feedback after giving a keynote, did you fail? No, you received more information on how to connect deeper with your audience. If your company took 5 years to become profitable, did you fail? No, you just took a slower journey so that you could learn a lot. But what if your company absolutely tanks? Failed, right? No, you did something bold, risky, and new. All practiced qualities that will get you further when you pursue other visions. There is so little we could learn if we never failed. For many of us listening to this book, failure is what gives us freedom. The freedom to fail is something to be celebrated. Now, I know that in some countries and cultures, failure is fatal. I am aware that not everyone has the freedom to create a business, a work of art, or pursue their dream. But you do. There are people in survival mode almost all of the time. And yet many of us have the privilege of being in creative mode all of the time. Never, or hardly ever, having to worry about anything but being in the offensive mode towards our dreams. Your mishaps and mistakes are not the cause of the end of your world. Yes, at times, they may feel like it. But when you begin to treat your freedom to fail as a privilege, you will realize the opportunity therein. One of my favorite proverbs is this: when you have your health, you have 1,000 dreams. When you don't, you have one. For those of us living in a country where you have the privilege to create every single day and your biggest worry is that you worked a 12-hour day or that you didn't like your pitch deck or that you've got to fire someone tomorrow, then stop, look up, and breathe in. Smell that? That's your freedom to fail. You can fail over and over and over again in your creative endeavors, your workouts, your pitches, your proposals, and how you decorate your bedroom. Everything and all of it is going toward your lifelong education, which is designed to make you brighter, sharper, stronger, surer, and more resourceful. Every fail is a gain. Every fail is an experiment. Yet, so many of us don't begin because of this fear of failure. Many can quote all of the cool Insta quotes about failure and can hang out in the most inspiring motivational circles and talk about how awesome failure is, but they still don't begin because they are terrified to fail. In our privileged part of the world, that is the closest thing we can get to failure. Not ever beginning. So, let's see if we can fail. Take a moment and think about that big thing you have been wanting to do, create, build, or try. Grab a journal and write it down if you're near one. Now make a list of all the possible ways you could fail by going for it. What are the consequences of you failing? My next question, are they really that bad? What could you learn if all of these failures actually happened, but they were really just experiments in disguise? And lastly, will you die? Probably not, unless you want a free dive off the Grand Canyon. What if you could be thriving in the thrill of life, feeling closer and closer to success 2.0? Wouldn't that be better than sitting here and waiting for the possibility of failure to evaporate from planet Earth? Newsflash, that ain't ever gonna happen. Why? Because shit would be way too boring and success would never taste as sweet. You will grow and evolve because of your willingness to fail, to suck, to navigate murky waters, and to trust that regardless of what happens, it's all perfect, and you are finally, truly participating in the big game, the most privileged game of all. What a privilege. As much as we can rewire ourselves to see failure as freedom, it is equally important to acknowledge the opportunities we have been given, because it's easy to take stuff for granted. We can wake up every day, open our laptops, and create anything we want. Through our laptops, we have the ability to connect with billions of people, all the while wearing flannel pajamas and a vintage Mickey Mouse t-shirt. We are always only a few degrees of separation away from anyone we want to connect with. The only thing from stopping us from writing the book, starting the business, making the move, creating the project, is our own resistance. We have events, books, programs, and self-education that is worth billions at our fingertips. We are surrounded by a world that is more supportive than ever of our creativity, our excellence, our craft, our risks, and our whack-ass ideas. The world has never been more ripe and ready for the big leap you are itching to take for the company you want to create to spark the movement you want to begin that becomes the book you are going to write. If all we have to do is step up and out to create epic shit, then why do so many of us forget and fall into a little whinge about how hard it all is, how challenging it is to risk it all, how brutal it is to fight for your business and wake up every day and show up for it? And yes, they are all valid fears. There are twists and turns and unexpected hurdles, but do you have any idea of how incredibly privileged you are to be here right now? Louis C.K. has a stand-up routine about flying. I fly a lot. Maybe you do too. And I know that people have forgotten what a freaking miracle it is for us to be able to fly. Louis reminds us of this. What a privilege to fly through the air in pure comfort and be able to go literally anywhere on earth. You can just sit up in the sky eating pretzels, scrolling Insta on the Wi-Fi, and look out above the clouds. His whole bit is about how people complain about a 30-minute delay, a $20 bag check, that they have a middle seat, or that there is no more walnut salad. Flying is the worst one because people come back from flights and they tell you their story, and it's like a horror story. They act like their flight was like a cattle car in the 40s in Germany. That's how bad they make it sound. They're like, it was the worst day of my life. First of all, we didn't board for 20 minutes, and then we get on the plane, and they made us sit there on the runway for 40 minutes. We had to just sit there. Or really, what happened next? Did you fly through the air incredibly like a bird? Did you partake in the miracle of human flight? Wow, you're flying. It's amazing. Everybody on the plane should just constantly be going, oh my God, yes, you're flying. You're sitting in a chair in the sky. Louis does the same with people who complain about slow ATMs. What the fuck are you complaining about? You push a button and money comes out of a slot. So remember, today is new and exciting and miraculous too. Your opportunity to create absolutely anything is new and exciting and miraculous too. Writing a book, building a company, launching a product, building a brand, starting a not-for-profit, creating a program, it's all new and exciting and miraculous too. We're just so damn used to the privilege of the freedom of failure that we've been gifted that we forget that we can create anything. So tomorrow when you suit up in your Mickey Mouse tee and ankle socks and whatever underwear you do or don't wear, open your laptop and prepare to unleash your epicness onto the world through that keyboard. Remember, what a privilege. And whatever suckiness enters your day, remember, what a privilege. And whenever resistance creeps in and makes you scroll Facebook just as you're heating up and crushing your tasks, remember, what a privilege. And when your accountant asks you to look over your statements and you eye roll as if it's as bad as crawling through a barricade of grenades, remember, what a privilege. And when your emails pile up and you have a little tanty about yours or someone else's inefficiency, remember, what a privilege. And when your program launch is delayed by 4 weeks and it messes up your entire schedule, remember, what a privilege. And when you're lacking motivation and you need to hear those three words that put that fire under your butt, remember this, what a privilege. The freedom to fail is liberating, exciting, and powerful. If we can remember that failing is a freedom, we'd begin more things and move forward in the direction of our calling and nudges, regardless of anything. In a time when we are spoiled with opportunity, options, choices, and freedom, it's easy to take our focus off the miracle and excitement and newness of each day. But once we can fall in love with the privilege not only to create, but to fail, then every day becomes the best day ever, and we begin to create. My little starseed, you are the most creative expression of the universe, the most beautiful example and expression of Mother Nature. You are the shiniest of stars and the most wild of souls. You are magic choosing to dance on this earth in the form of a human body. A beautiful, cute, wonderfully brilliant human in its physical body. This body gives you a mind to work with, thoughts to learn to dance with, emotions to learn to roll with, and oh so many earthly human qualities that make you so divinely messy. Messy is the new perfect. Human and perfect do not fit in the same sentence, baby. In reality, there is no such thing as perfect. There is such a thing as real. You are real. Never ever cover up a single part of your humanness. Not your wildest, scariest thoughts, not your deepest, darkest fears, not all the things that seem to contradict each other in your life, nothing. Stuff up. Be confused. Look messy. Love yourself even when you judge others, tell a fib, or do something that isn't right. You are magic in a body, and you don't ever have to pretend to be anything other than that divine fusion. You will never go wrong if you can always remember you are both very human and very magic. Love, Mum. Human as fuck. Equal parts human and magic. Leading you. Earlier this year, I was replying to the request for an interview for a summit where I was to be a presenter. Include your title was on the things the email was asking of me. Every time I read that, every time I'm asked that, I cringe. What the hell am I supposed to put? My face screws up a little and I get all, am I a speaker, a self-made millionaire, an entrepreneur, a humanitarian, a mentor, a CEO, someone who posts deep shit sometimes on Facebook? I used to joke, I'm a barefoot bandit tree hugger with a degree in badassery. I mean, I was only half joking, because that has always summed me up more than any other title that I've ever used, which only seemed to highlight what I do or what I've achieved. Who is going to ask who I am? So on this day, replying to this email, I did something a little brash. Hey, I was feeling like Cartman from South Park. Whatever, whatever, I do what I want. I roll with 12 gangs. I began my reply with, my title is Peter Kelly, human as fuck. I don't care for titles or long bios where I bang on about my achievements. A few weeks later, the organization released their schedule of events, and next to Jack Canfield, multiple New York Times best-selling author, and Teal Swan, the well-known figure who writes and teaches about spirituality, was Peter Kelly, human as fuck. I was tired of introducing myself publicly, at events, on podcasts, by what I do, instead of what I am. And as it turned out, fellow conscious leaders got my intention. Sure, I get titles. People need to know why the heck you're relevant and why on earth they'd want to listen to you speak for 60 minutes. If you say, I like chocolate ice cream and me and my Tesla go to bed by 10 p.m., latest, people are going to skip your keynote and go find someone else to listen to, someone who sounds like they have their shit together. But it felt really good, all the way into my cells good, to introduce myself this time as human as fuck. Human as fuck was what I needed to lead with so that people, even those in the pursuit for all sorts of epic greatness, knew the power of being so beautifully, messily human as fuck. For it is when we can accept and embrace our humanness that we stop trying to be a societal robot or someone who claims to be spiritually superior, or that we don't bleed anymore, or that we never have a meltdown. I was now here to help people get real. Human as fuck isn't just about being authentic. It's not just about posting a photo with messy hair and hashtag the real me. It's not about sharing a teeny bit of struggle on Facebook like, guys, my creativity is blocked. See, even people like me have tough days. That still has a tone of, I have my shit together. Being human as fuck is about being authentic about where we're being inauthentic. It'd be like you saying, you know what, guys? I've been saying that I'm totally on board this climate change thing, but behind the scenes, I've made zero changes in my life. Because you're human as fuck. It's about recognizing the parts of us, the thoughts, the behaviors, the feelings that are so in opposition of who we think we are that we can barely even admit them to ourselves. Like how you're a spiritually sound lightworker who meditates while wearing white in the mornings and practices Reiki to heal others. But 10 minutes later, you pull the finger at someone who cuts you off in the freeway, yelling, fuck off, dickhead! Because you're human as fuck. And because road rage, well, let's face it, is real. Human as fuck is being honest about where we're being hypocritical, where we're saying one thing and practicing another, when we're still really struggling ourselves in an area we claim to have nailed. Like being a really powerful health and wellness coach and preaching healthy habits, yet in the evening, still eating 45 grams of sugar before bed because you just haven't quite nailed the harmonious relationship with food you're teaching to others. These so-called dualities, good versus bad, positive versus negative, are not dualities at all. The Reiki and the road rage are equal parts magic and human. So often what I teach is what I most need to learn. Always. When I'm teaching and when it's flowing out of me like an effortless waterfall, tap, I'm in the magic. And then behind the scenes when I'm putting it all into practice, having little meltdowns and experience growing pains just like my students do, I'm the human. Let's face it, being raw and real is pretty commonplace now. It's 2017, and millennials have the greatest bullshit detectors of any generation to ever walk this planet. Hello, divine intolerance. We must honor all of us and realize the power of our magic is nothing without our messy humanness. Perfection is the furthest thing from our purpose. Being human is the most spiritual thing we can do. Because we're in acceptance, we're in the wholeness of who we are. We're not trying to be Buddha. I mean, sure, we can be spiritually inspired and always strive to grow into the most compassionate, loving, light beings we can, but we can't ignore the power of the mess. Owning yourself in totality is more inspiring to the world than the fact you can meditate for 45 minutes without losing focus. How beautiful is it when we can love ourselves despite the fact that sometimes our thoughts and behaviors make us feel like frauds? Are we frauds or are we just humans? Now I'm looking at you, homie. Are you trying to relate too much to your tribe through what you do and less of who you are? Are you embarrassed to mess up or to even spill your food down your shirt? How have you been trying to be the Dalai Lama or Elon Musk in robot form? Think of who you want to serve. Do they want to see you, the human who is infinitely capable of everything and anything? Or you, the robot who was anointed and appointed with gifts and talents that normal folk just missed out on? What makes you human as fuck? Here's a pop out, a Facebook post that I did about being human as fuck a couple of years ago. Hi, I'm Peter Kelly, and I am human as fuck. Can someone please make me up a name tag with that title? I'm not a sage or a guru or a mogul of any kind. Yes, human as fuck. Thank you. I'm just your homie, and just like you, my super weakness is my superpower. I'm human. Human as fuck. I teach my tribe about radical productivity, but some days my greatest achievement is keeping less than 13 tabs open at once. Human. I stand on stage and teach very genuinely about the voice versus the noise, but the noise in my own mind is so freaking loud that I'm pretty sure it borrowed some juice from Lance Armstrong. Human. I'm so particular with what I eat, and I ask the waiter 25 questions about the ingredients in food so to stay super duper healthy, but I'll happily eat about half a jar of almond butter at around 10 p.m. every night and a whole loaf of banana bread before my period. Human. I wrote a thesis at age 21 and got first class honors for it, but I've had more than my fair share of benders, such as the time I left a nightclub in Berlin at 4 p.m. without my bra. Human. I meditate every single day without fail, but I will go from zero to psycho real quick if my camera roll won't scroll at the pace I need it to find that pic from October 2014. Human. I tell my brother off for being on his phone too much, but I'll spend 45 minutes cross-eyed on Instagram, filling my head with nothing but 20 screenshots of the most inappropriate memes on the planet. Human. I've read more personal development books than I've had hot dinners, but I still have absolutely zero patience for dumb questions, slow walkers, and condescending tones. Human. I earned my first million in entrepreneurship by the age of 26. But I started work at the age of 13 for $5.15 an hour and had more than 8 jobs before I graduated high school. I used to hide out the back from my cool friends when they'd come into the subway where I worked. Human. I'm excited by my vision and projects, and I'm so dang grateful to get to do what I love every day at this age. But some days are so overwhelming and challenging that I mope around the house looking for the naughtiest shit I can find to eat, and seriously wonder if running away to the jungle would be easier. Human. I teach and preach some super deep shit about how to be truly free and how to choose your own thoughts and change your energetic story, but some days I feel so trapped by some persistent, scary thoughts that I forget everything I teach others to do. Human. I sign every petition I can when it comes to global warming or taking care of our planet. I recycle, compost, eat plant-based food, give money to environmental endeavors, buy trees for friends' birthdays, but I still have plastic wrap in my drawer. Human. One day I read my book and think, oh my God, this is so freaking dope. And the next day I look at it in disgust, like, this book is a piece of shit and it's so boring. I need to start again. Human. I love my family more than anything, but when they come to stay at my house, I feel anxious and turn into a mega nag. Then, when they leave, I feel so guilty. Human. I've studied hypnobirthing, anthropology, I've done a lot of conscious creation work and scripts around my pregnancy and birth, but some days during pregnancy I still look down at my belly and worry if the baby's heart is still beating. Human. I love my work so much and I love my tribe so much, but I'd be lying if I said it was easy for me to stay for 3 hours after events taking photos. Human. I take this leadership thing seriously, but also lightly. Our number one job as we lead in the new way is to remember, embrace, and talk about our humanness. Our generation is going to make some serious magic together and unite like never before. For reals. One team. We are going to wake up together and see some insane things that will be created by what appear to be superhumans. I'm looking at you, children under the age of 16. Yet regardless of how epic we humans become and how many astronomical things we will create, people will always want to hear about how frickin' tough it was to do it, how loud our fears got, how our doubt almost killed us, and how we did it despite being a human, and because we are a human. Cry, mess up, royally fail, swear, change your mind a million times, crap your pants if you have to. It's all just as glorious as if you won a trophy. We are infinite souls connected to an infinite multiverse, and we haven't even scratched the sides of what we're capable of. We've been made into humans for a reason. We evolve differently to others, but not above them. Once you've embarked on this personal growth journey, you will begin to hear a lot of things that suggest your own hierarchy. A popular one is, fuck the haters, they're just blinded by your light. Sure, that can get you riled up, and may even be true. But phrases such as this suggest that some people are better than others. Such as, if you go to a Tony Robbins course and your friends don't go with you, you are the one who is evolved as fuck and they are just basic. You probably deserve to borrow the Dalai Lama's robe, right? No, you do not. Notice the ego and judgment laced throughout these sentiments, as if there are levels to life. There are not levels. But there are fields of alignment, and that is what we are going to base our relationships from. Because you will find that some people are in yours and some people are not. But now you know that there is not better or less in relationship. We are here to shift the paradigm. Everyone is exactly where they are meant to be. Everyone is in their own process, using their own tools to the best of their ability. You have nothing to project, expect, or demand of anyone. But you do have everything to ask of yourself. Choose for you, and you will be living in alignment. A quick note. Remember when being human as fuck, to share your wins, your joys, and your breakthroughs too. Sometimes we over-obsess with sharing our struggles because they feel more relatable. Humans have so much to celebrate, and our wins are relatable too. And they're inspiring. People connect more with who you are, how you mess up, your hypocritical thoughts, your fears, your struggles, your breakthroughs, and your pain. We are humans and are not meant to be perfect in this life at all. Our goal here isn't to master everything, but to accept ourselves and to love ourselves regardless. This does not mean don't do the work to become better. Of course not. But realize that even if you spend 45 years with Pema Chodron and feel like you can levitate out of your shoes, you're still human until you leave. And the world needs more people who are human as fuck. Get real. Neutrality kills authenticity. Leading us. Before we even begin this chapter, I want you to reveal yourself. Try it. Just answer these 5 questions with radical honesty. Number 1, what keeps you up at night in fear? Number 2, who do you compare yourself to? Number 3, what do you preach about that you have not yet nailed yourself? Number 4, what's stopping you from creating what you want to create? Number 5, what gives you the biggest goosebumps? Reveal yourself to me. Because if you want to build a ride or die tribe in the new way, the only way you will be able to do it is to reveal yourself. You might be able to build up to 1 million social media followers by sharing content and nailing the algorithm. But building a ride or die tribe is friendship, not fanship. It's rich and deep and raw and real. It's human as fuck. And there is only one way to build it. Reveal yourself. When you post online, do you post as if you are talking to your friends? If you are the kind of girl that drops the F-bomb at lunch with your best bud, then why are you writing online as if you are the next Shakespeare? You, my friend, are sending a mixed message. You will be attracting the highbrow literary folk when all you want to reach out to is people who are rough and raw, like you. You know, human as fuck. Social media is full of motivators, influencers, inspirers, and teachers who have miles of great content to share. But do you want to know how your tribe is going to find you? You must go beyond the truth when you speak and write and share with others. Truth is essential, but truth will only take you as far as accuracy can go. To reveal yourself is a new depth. Think about what goes through your head 90% of your day. So why do you post a run-of-the-mill motivational quote? Why not share with people, in your own words, what tough shit you are really going through today? Or maybe what effortless flow of life you are experiencing throughout your day. To find your people, you must learn to stop holding back what you really feel. You know, those fiery rants you go on to your husband when you're getting ready for bed, but you're just so lit up you can't hold back a single thing because he's your man and he's not going to judge you. Well, guess what? The people in your tribe are not going to judge you either. You must make the shift to stop telling others what they need to hear and start showing them who you are. There are no amount of likes in the world that matter more than one soul seeing themselves in another soul. You don't have to reach out to your tribe. Instead, let them come to you as you open up who you are. Move them. Don't just impress them. Have you ever been in the audience and been so impressed by someone's speech? The way the sentences tie together, the words they choose to use, the flow of their narrative, the ease of their stage presence? I sure have. I just love watching these masterful speakers nail the art of presenting. How many times have you left a presentation, be it online or in person, and felt so moved that you had to make a change? I mean, you look back and remember the exact part of the presentation when you felt the shift in your cells and you began to understand something differently. Maybe that even felt invasive or uncomfortable, like that person just reached into your body and changed something, woke something up. Good. They did. It was your truth. I'm guessing a few of you have experienced this, but the majority of us simply remain impressed by people's work, rather than deeply, soulfully moved. There is absolutely nothing wrong with impressive work, but we are here to move people. You want people to hear you and feel as though they've never felt so understood in their entire life. Impressing people is fun, but there is nothing like moving someone to take action. The words, "For the first time I feel understood," feels deeper than, "She is so epic." Courageous leadership is that it goes beyond where most people are willing to go, whether on stage, on social media, in person, or in a book. Perhaps it's the brother or sister at the wedding giving a speech right from the ticker that has everyone feel the depth of their relationship to the point of goosebumps, and not just a recited version of that time the groom got so drunk and pissed his pants. I went to a wedding like this recently. The brother's speech was a highlight of my year, let alone the wedding. Or the yoga teacher who begins class by sharing an intense conflict she had over the weekend that upset her and shook her and reminded her that this week she needed to be extra kind to herself and prioritize her practice. She connected with her students more powerfully than even the most powerful Om. Or the dad who looks their teenager in the eye and shares with them that he felt so bullied and abandoned by his parents growing up and that sometimes that's why he appears controlling to his kids. Because he just wants to overdo the love so they never ever felt like he did. Or the best friend who sent their girlfriend a handwritten letter right before she gave birth, telling her everything she loved about her, how strong and brave she is, and how much her feminine grace inspires all of the females around her. I'm not here to tell you how to speak, but to show you the difference between impressive and moving. You can move people with any style, and we are moved by people who go deeper and get more real. Lisa Nichols has a well-rehearsed keynote she presents called I'm Just Here to Stir Your Soul. Yes, she's nailed it now. It's a rehearsed keynote. But when she does it, she drops in, looks into people's eyes, feels every word, and doesn't finish until people are visibly moved. I remember seeing her present it in Vegas before we started working together, and she moved me. So many people in the audience had tears, including her. She cares about mastery when it comes to speaking, but she cares more about moving people. Then there is someone like Gary Vee, who, to me, is so moving. I don't think he's ever rehearsed a keynote in his life. He gets on stage, arms often folded, and sometimes dives right into Q&A. His style is very much, let it rip what's on my heart and let me show you the passion I have for my work without covering up a single detail or a single fuck. He is seen by some as obnoxious, over the top, and potty mouthed, but he moves the shit out of me, and I'm sure you can imagine our styles are a little similar. His ability to tell people exactly what is true without any sugarcoating it and without giving any fucks as to whether or not they approve pierces through my body and into my cells like a laser beam. That's why he does it. He wants people to change. He doesn't just want people to say, Gary Vee is the best speaker. Oh my God. Two very different people with two very different styles, but two people that move people. Stop trying to sound good. One way I help my students craft presentations and get ready to speak on video or on stage is with these simple words. Stop trying to sound good. Anytime you are trying to sound good or articulate, be smart, look perfect, and speak in a way that the 60-year-old from Seattle will think you're exactly eloquent, you are speaking from your head. I want you to speak from your heart. People did not travel across the world or hit play on YouTube or read your blog post or come to your yoga class that morning to hear from your head. Speak from the heart. Connecting heart to heart with other souls is what will move people, and it will move you too. I've sat in audiences and watched people, very reputable people, read slide after slide, 60 minutes straight from the autoprompter. I zone out, don't you? Sure, I can listen and hear your words, but there is not a whole lot I feel from you. We do need our heads to speak. Our minds are the guide, keeping us on time, allowing us to access words and memories from our brains to share, but never to filter our heart out to the point where everything we say is a watered-down version of what we truly mean. Words that sound so good, but lack the charge of a truly moving share. And I'm not just speaking of speakers, but anyone who lets it rip on video or hosts their message on a Facebook Live. Your purpose is to move people and to help them see things differently, and your teleprompter ain't going to do that for you. Speak as if the slides got lost, your notebook burned, or the program just crashed. Keep your message directly linked between you and your people. Oh my, what will I say? You're thinking. You're going to say exactly what you know is in your heart, the exact place you want to be speaking from, because speaking from the heart is the language of the new way. Trust me. It's easier to trust yourself over the slides. It's easier to speak about what is true than what you've taken 2 weeks to prepare. I'm so blessed to have so many people come to me after my presentations to tell me how moved they were. And I can say with all truth and humility that I know why. When I stand on a stage to speak, I'm not trying to sound good. I'm trusting the people in the audience with my heart and allowing them to feel the depth of what it shares. This connection you can create with someone, especially within a big group. When you stand there and as if to say, here, see me, all of me, is not just delivering to the audience, but receiving what they are delivering to you. I look at them, not a teleprompter. I stand on stage as a human who is trusting in her ability to share with them what is real, what is true, and what has never been scripted. They can feel that my main work on stage is not in remembering what I have to say, but in connecting with each of them. Here we can see, nay, feel, how your energy speaks way louder than your words. You say so much with your energy alone. It's just not about the words as much as it's about what you're saying on there with your energy. Have you ever forced a Facebook post? Tried so hard to make it sound so epic, even when you didn't feel anything at all? But you hit post anyway, only to find that no one out there is connecting with it. On the flip side, have you ever written a Facebook post that you sat and hammered out, barely any sentence structure, but a whole lot of heart and fire, only to have people comment and say, "Wow, how did you know what I was feeling today? I needed this." When you're standing on stage, writing a post, writing a book, or even just chatting in person, your energy is being received by others' bullshit detectors. Each detector out there being dialed up and up to determine if the words and phrases you are transmuting are your real message, what your soul wants to share. So this is just a little PK aside. The bullshit detector. People frequently ask me how I speak so candidly and openly. "I love how raw you are," someone will say. "How do you do that?" Well, I speak the truth that's in my heart, all of the time. Anytime I speak from another place, my body reminds me, like an alarm going off, that makes me stop and think, "Wow, it's hard to get these words out. Stop." We have a little device which was gifted to us at birth that allows us to navigate our consciousness more easily, with less distraction and more clarity. This little device has a knob on the side that controls its effectiveness. This device is called your bullshit detector. Yeah, it's a real thing, and it really works. It's for detecting the degree of authenticity in our words and in our energies. This special device allows us to feel beyond what anyone says, what anyone writes, or what anyone posts on social media, by stripping information down to the true and real intention behind what we are reading or seeing. You can think of this bullshit detector as our tool for receiving truth, and the universe is constantly turning the knob to dial it up every day, every week, and every year as the need for detecting bullshit grows. Some people frequently use theirs, while others, I feel, have tried hard to find that knob and turn it off, because it's easier that way, you know, taking things at face value. Others, like you and me, prefer to be able to read energy beyond that. That's probably why you're reading this book and listening to this audio, because you're ready to dial it up, to level up, to go deep, and get even more real. So why not use that clairsentient gift we've all been given, huh? We all have one, but it's up to each of us if we choose to use it. I love my bullshit detector. I let the universe turn it up, and I turn it up myself whenever I can. I use it to help me seek out the intentions behind communication and determine those words and messages that don't match the intention and truth. However, I don't just use this device to bust others on their bullshit. No, I use it on myself. I dial it up and allow it to guide me to communicate as truthfully as I can with others. I dial it up before I speak and write and share, even on social. Before we continue, let's clarify one thing. This is not a lie detector, which you can find at your local police station. This is a bullshit detector, and lies are far less complex than bullshit. When I ask, "Are you bullshitting me?" I'm really asking, "Are you sharing all of your truth?" If you're holding back, that's bullshit. That's what this device can detect. In this new era of evolution and awakened consciousness, more and more people can tell what we truly mean. Why? Because we need to be able to. It's an evolutionary requirement. We're exposed to so much more information than any generation ever before us. Think about it. All the podcasts, TV shows, documentaries, live events, Facebook lives, social media feeds. In any 1 minute, we can scroll through hundreds of people's daily messages, and unless we can choose what we accept and what we don't, we drown in it. Information is everywhere, and we need some sort of new equipment that allows us to sift through it and decide what we pay attention to. This information overload signals a requirement that we go deeper in order to engage and understand each other, and we must go deeper to speak beyond superficial conversations. Time to get real. There are no variances in realness. It's real or it's not. It's true or it's false. It's black or it's white. And I have learned that I prefer not to dabble in the gray. A few years ago, when I began to understand what the power of speaking was all about, and I'm not talking just on stage, but in print, in person, and online, I took the lid off. I began to let it all out, because that is what the new way commands us to do. Get the megaphone out and yell, "Get real!" with me right now. We are the generation who is here to share it all authentically, because authenticity is the only language of the generation whose bullshit detectors are tuned up every day. So now just a little pop out. 5 keys to speaking on stage powerfully. Number 1, practice letting rip. If you need to practice on your own, just pressing record on a video and going for it, do it. Practice letting the channel open and speaking from your heart and not your head. You want to be able to speak whenever, wherever, at any time of day with no notes. And guess what? You can, if you don't try to over-curate what your heart has already nailed. Sure, we want to master keynotes and be a responsible speaker who stays on task. TED Talks have a specific time limit, and so do most speaking gigs. I get that. But you want to approach every speech with 100% trust that you're fine, even if your mind blanks. This is why practicing just letting it rip on Facebook Live is really good, because you can't edit it. Number two, trust. This is the most important element of